In this episode, I set out to discuss dividends, and I did that very thing with a Peter Greshens, and I had fun doing it, and I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you. The dividend elections can be changed only on the anniversary day. So if I'm in the middle of the year, you know, and I want the dividend to be paid to cash, you know, I have to do that on the anniversary, right? I do all the paperwork, whatever the necessary requirement is. Then they'll send me a check and I can make that permanent, you know, just send me a check. I'm going to change the dividend election to receive the dividend in cash. And I'll receive that dividend every year in cash until I change that election again. I might change my mind 2 years from now on the anniversary and tell the company, don't send me the dividend, have it paid to the PUA or reduce the premium or whatever. So dividend elections are changed on the policy anniversary. Okay. And then there are dividend adjustments. I've talked about this several times. Mainly when it comes to direct recognition loans and non-direct recognition loans. And you get out into that field, into the big wide world and the infinite banking footprint, and then it seems like the gurus and the experts double and triple. You know, they're just like, man, I thought there was only one or two. No, there's hundreds of them. Okay. I don't want a lot of post-production editing. I'm just saying direct recognition loans. So it's a company who directly recognizes an outstanding loan. So they adjust the dividend because there's an outstanding loan and it's negative. And I don't, you know, can it be positive? Yes. I talked about all of that in actually is an episode that I, in 263, it wound up talking a lot about direct and non-direct recognition, but the episode was really to speak on the jank marketing within the infinite banking footprint within the life insurance industry in general. So it did, I know I touched on more topics than direct or non-direct, but the purpose of that was to just point out the character, the quality, the method and of marketing, right, that goes on in the big wide world full of just inaccuracies. I'll be a gentleman and leave it at that. So direct recognition, there's an adjustment to the dividend on an outstanding loan, a non-direct recognition loan, and companies can either be direct or non-direct, or they can be both. You know, it's like, well, you can have your choice at the beginning of the loan. You can choose to have a dividend adjusted or not. So there's a direct recognition. There's a non-direct recognition. A non-direct recognition company just pays a dividend. Whatever they declared, that gets paid, whether there's an outstanding loan on the policy or not. All right. And then let me say that the dividends, like when a dividend is paid and I have it paid into the paid up additions rider, right, which is what Nelson demonstrates, talks about, and most people in the big wide world of the infinite banking footprint, that's what they encourage, rightly so. Generally, every case is different. But when the dividend is paid into the paid up additions rider, that adds to the basis of your policy, which could affect you later whenever you start enjoying passive income via a life insurance policy, whether it's withdrawals or loans or a combination, right? So it increases your basis. And you know, I had a conversation not too long ago. Someone was in another country talking about life insurance, and they said, well, this is different, you know, because, you know, the basis. No, the basis is different was the gist of the conversation because they're in a different country. No. The basis is a basis, right? Now, the tax codes are different all over, no question. But whenever you put money into an investment, that's your basis. If I put $100,000 in, that's my basis, right? I'm taxed, depending on the character of the account. Or I'm talking about after-tax accounts. Or I'm not talking about I'm going to get a pre-tax and make a pre-tax purchase or contribution to an investment. I get paid. I take out of that payment, out of the income, I'm making an investment and I put $100,000 into an investment. That's my basis, right? If the investment grows to $200,000, I'm taxed on the gain. All right. And now the character could change. I get it where, you know, if it's an IRA, but the basis, very simply, very generally and universally, the basis is your investment, your payment into. So when in life insurance is not an investment, I'm not saying it is, I'm doing a comparison there. So if I pay a premium to a life insurance company for a policy, that is my basis in the policy. Whenever I receive a dividend, if I have the dividend paid into the PUA, right, into the PUA rider of a policy, that increases my basis. Okay? Which is a good thing, in my little humble opinion. Yeah, I think that's a fairly decent example. Okay. And then, you know, then you also have, I should probably mention this earlier. You have the action of a dividend, the mechanics of a policy. You know, they work somewhat differently whenever you have like blended PUA riders. And I know I'm bringing in blended PUA riders on a episode, mainly discussing dividends. But if I have a blended PUA, so, and now maybe I'll talk about structure of a policy a little bit later. I don't know how many times I've talked about structure. I've written about structure, properly structured policies within the infinite banking footprint, within the life insurance industry. But then, so this kind of comes into structure. You know, if, you know, I pay a premium, part of it is going to be a base premium. Part of it is going to be a PUA premium. And some PUAs are blended. There's a blended component. You have the PUA, which is a paid-up addition rider, but you also have a term component blended with the PUA. So that's what I mean when I'm talking about blended PUAs. And most all companies have them. They all function very similarly, but somewhat technically different. But the similarities are enough to understand the similarities, to understand the mechanics of it. Okay. So in an awful lot of the blended PUAs, the dividend pays the cost of the increasing term component of the blended rider. The blended PUA rider has a term component. And you know as well as I do, term is cheap. The older you get, it's inexpensive. The longer you live, it's got an exponential curve to the cost. The cost of that insurance goes up. The cost of the term insurance, whether it's a rider or standalone, goes up. It either goes up annually or it goes up in at time periods, right? But typically with the blended PUAs, you know, it's got the cost of the annual renewable term. Typically, can there be some differences? Yes, but functionally, the results are all the same. Okay. But if I have a blended PUA, the dividend, and some companies require the dividend to pay the cost of that increasing insurance first. And then if there's a remainder, then it goes to cash inside the PUA, the blended PUA. Okay. Now, I just think that one through. That's why I don't like blended PUAs. Do I use them? Have I used them? Yes. There's always a case that's outside the curve. And it's probably not you. You know, I know we all suffer. Oh, but my case is different. Those are very specific cases. Anyway, so that dividend in a blended PUA, the majority of the time is allocated to the cost of the term. All right. I mean, I've talked about that more times than I really want to. I think there's two episodes that I have released. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but PUA 1, PUA 2. Just go to the James Nethery channel on YouTube and search PUA. It'll come up, all right? Okay. The taxation of dividends, all right? Well, before we get to taxation, how does the IRS classify a dividend? You hear, you know, these financial gurus on TV and the radio. They're really not gurus. They're entertainers, the financial entertainers. The financial gurus, most of the time out in the big wide world, they're really just impersonators. They're impersonating a financial guru. They're not really. But the financial entertainers, you know, term is the only way to go. Whole life is overpriced. And, you know, it's all paid to the commissions or the life insurance agent and just everything negative. And I know where the most negative articles are about whole life insurance and even about the infinite banking concept. So if you really want to see the worst of the worst, let me know. I'll share them with you. Other than that, I don't want to give them any kind of recognition, but they exist. Okay. And they all like to talk about, you know, the dividends at 2%. There's 2% increase. I don't know where they get the numbers. I don't really care. They fabricate them to make a presentation so you will write them a check. But, and this goes back to, you know, the consumer advocates back in the 80s when they're beating up the life insurance companies. But life insurance is not clear, can't understand it. So they're insulting the intelligence of the all-American average individual and family. Like, this is too complicated. Whole life is too complicated for them to understand. Which I disagree with that. I think you are smart enough. Literally, you're intelligent enough to understand what's going on. I don't agree with that. So in comes the government. And Ralph Nader is the guy I was trying to remember, trying to recall his name. You know, it's too complicated. You've got to, you know, the average person can't figure it out. And so you got to unbundle life insurance, right? Separate the cash component, the cash value, the cash accumulation from the cost of the insurance. Life insurance companies didn't even defend or even make a case, in my humble opinion. But they tried, again, to be all things to all people, and they came out with universal life insurance. So here's an accumulation side, you know, and interest rates were high at the time, right? So, you know, here's how you accumulate money. You pay a premium. Some of it goes to the accumulation component. Others go to the cost of insurance component. So the life insurance company made a weak, you know, defense coming out with new products. That I talk about IULs, Index Universal Life, Universal Life, you know, more than I care to. But the IRS classified the dividend of a life insurance company, right? When you get paid a dividend, it is classified in the Internal Revenue Code as a return of premium, right? And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't care how you classify it, IRS. I don't care. Just life insurance company pay me a dividend. But because of that classification in the Internal Revenue Code, you know, these financial entertainers say, see, they overcharged you. They're just giving you some of your money back. Like, whatever. But, you know, you simply make accusations without any context. And people like, yeah, totally makes sense. Yeah, the guy's making all the commission. The evil insurance company is, you know, just giving you back some of your own money, you know, like, here, peasant, have some crumbs. I mean, oh my gosh. Oh, and of course, when you die, the life insurance company keeps your cash value. It's like, all of that really sounds good. It has made, you know, people make decisions that, you know, they might not have otherwise made. And I think surely they could have made better decisions if they had a broader context. Okay. So because it's a return of premium, according to the Internal Revenue Code, it's not taxable income to me, right? Compare that to a dividend that's issued or paid by a stock. You know, you buy shares of a stock. They send you a dividend. That's income, brother. Yeah, that's taxable. Okay. Where the dividend is not taxable to the owner of a life insurance company. So a life insurance company dividend is not taxable. And, oh, yeah, did I say it adds to the basis? Oh, yes. Yes, you did. Okay, don't jump over any of these points, in my humble opinion. I might not be clearly, succinctly, but what I'm saying, you can listen to it more than one time. It's okay to slow it down. I know I talk slow. Slow it down, speed it up, what have you. None of this is complicated. It's so not complicated. Okay. And then if I talk about the power of the dividend, because the dividend is very, very powerful, very powerful. Especially when it's paid to the paid up additions rider. receive the dividend, or the company declares the dividend. My dividend election was to be paid to the paid-up additions rider. That dividend goes straight to the paid-up additions rider without an expense. There's no cost, right? There's no charge to that dividend being applied to the paid-up additions rider. Yep. What does it do? It goes straight to cash. If the dividend was $1,500, there's a $1,500 increase in cash value in my PUA. All right. And because there's more cash value this year than there was last year, my dividend next year is going to be bigger. So the dividend paid to the PUA, it increases your basis. It's not taxable, and it goes straight dollar for dollar to the cash value, and it buys additional death benefit, paid up additions. That's paid up. The death benefit additions, it's an additional death benefit. It's paid up. No future premium is due. And it earns future dividends. It adds to the exponential compounding curve of a life insurance policy. And it's extremely powerful. It creates early liquidity, right? And you see that in the big wide world, talking about structure. People mutilate policies now to achieve that. I'll talk about that later. All right. Here's what Nelson says. Well, let me say about the charge, because I said it was no charge, right? There's no cost to that. So if I have a $1,500 dividend declared, I have it paid into the paid up additions rider, $1,500 goes straight to the PUA. There's an exact $1,500 increase in PUA cash value. Compared to, I just wrote, if I have the ability, right, if I wrote the $1,500 check, sent it to the life insurance company and said, hey, apply this to the paid up additions rider. They're going to take that $1,500, subtract a charge, and then the net will be applied to the PUA. All right. So, there is a charge on a PUA premium that exists with every life insurance company. And there is not a charge when the dividend is paid to the paid up additions rider. All right. And we can talk about that for a minute. You know, some of these companies, they charge 14% the first year. Oh, and if you're rated, they'll add 2 points for that. So if I pay $100,000 to the paid-up additions rider in the first year, they're going to take out $14,000. The net's going to go to the PUA. There's some companies that charge, you know, 8 and 10 in the first year. There's then it goes down right after the first year. There are other companies charge 6. You know, so there is a charge to the premium that's paid to the paid up additions rider. And I'm just saying it's another area these companies play games with. But, you know, just to be aware of that, once you see it and understand it, it's not that big a deal, especially when it causes my future dividends to go up, right? It's very difficult to see. You're not going to look at a life insurance illustration. You'll read it in the disclosures. It'll be in the contract what the charge is to the paid up additions. But if I pay $1,000 to the PUA this year, I'm going to see an increased dividend compared to if I didn't pay that $1,000 to the PUA. Right, so it's very hard to see where the charge is. I'm telling you, it's there. Okay, Nelson has something to say about that as well. Becoming Your Own Banker, page 23, in my quote: if the owner uses the dividend to purchase paid up insurance (parentheses), no cost for acquisition (comma), sales commissions, etc. (comma). The result is an ever-increasing tax-deferred accumulation of cash values that support an ever-increasing death benefit. The man gets it done in half a paragraph. Not even half. Gets it done in a few lines. Very, very simple. And, yep, there's an increased death benefit, right? Paid up additions, there's an increase in death benefit. And oftentimes, and I'm going to take another diversion here, that, you know, we want to take the death benefit out of the whole component of building policies and becoming our own banker and practicing this idea of controlling the banking function. When you cannot separate the death benefit, life insurance does not come any other way. right? It's very important. Can't really get into it here. I've gotten into it other places. There's more places and modules at bankingwithlife.com. I think there's a fabulous source of information, educational there that you should consider taking advantage of. Okay, I know I've discussed the PUA. I've already talked about that, part one, part two. Yep. Okay. Nelson continues on the same page. By the way, these dividends can get pretty significant over a long period of time. I bought a policy from a major insurance company in 1959, and the annual dividend is over 10 times the annual premium now. This book was published in 2000. Right, he bought his policy in 1959. I know we're talking about a long time period. I know it's hard. I know it's a challenge. But I also know that long-term thinking and actions will serve you better and very well over a lifetime. But they'll serve you better than short-term thinking when it comes to the infinite banking concept. And the field is rife with short-term thinking and short-term actions promoted by the wannabe infinite banking gurus, right? They can't think past next week, my opinion. I know it's a very broad statement. I got a special place in my heart for agents. I know and talked with many of them. There's many that I'm aware of that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, if I quote Dr. Seuss, okay? Long-term thinking will serve you very well, and it will serve you extremely well when it comes to the infinite banking concept. Short-term thinking is not going to make anything better when it comes to the infinite banking concept. Okay, I digress. Let me start with the beginning of the quote. By the way, these dividends can get pretty significant over a long period of time. I bought a policy from a major insurance company in 1959, and the annual dividend is over 10 times the annual premium now. They would have been much larger had I not used the annual dividend to reduce premiums for the first 15 years of that policy. Issued in 1959. It's all now from 1959 to 2000. The dividend was 10 times greater than the annual premium. The annual dividend was 10 times greater than the annual premium. And they would have been even larger if he hadn't taken the dividend to reduce the premium. He stunted the growth of that policy. He stunted the velocity of the dividends in that policy. But then he takes full ownership and tells you, this is what I did. And if I hadn't have done this, this would have occurred. You know, hindsight's always 20/20. I get it. Okay. I think I could literally go on and on, but let me talk about structure for a minute.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.